You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Hope you had a great Christmas, Common Fans. Hope you're kind of getting out of bed slowly and still enjoying a holiday break. Maybe even eating some leftover Christmas cookies, enjoying your toys that you got for Christmas. But most importantly, it's time to pivot and get focused on Nebraska's upcoming bowl game. Of course, the Huskers play in the Pinstripe Bowl on December 28th, first bowl game in 8 years. Things are moving back in the right direction. We finally got a bowl game to watch, Common Fans.
Yes.
Very exciting. And we have such a cool guest with us today. So the Huskers in the Pinstripe Bowl to be played at Yankee Stadium. And this will be their first bowl game in New York City since the Gotham Bowl in 1962. And we have got with us today a Gotham Bowl veteran, someone who was actually there and lived and breathed it. Dwayne Carlson was on the Nebraska football team for 4 years, from 1959 to 1962. And of course, he was part of that magical first season for Bob Devaney in 1962, where Coach Devaney kind of flipped things for the Huskers and took off from there. So we're very excited to have Mr. Carlson with us today, and we're going to get into all kinds of history with his own personal history and Coach Devaney and the Gotham Bowl and all sorts of things. So, Dwayne, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Glad to be here.
So you're from Fullerton, is that right?
Yes, Nance County, Fullerton. It's just north of Aurora and Grand Island. So small town. We were Class B when I was in high school, and we had three sports, track, football, and basketball. So it was, I don't know how to explain it, but it sports was always something that I enjoyed doing. So, and I came from the farm, so I was used to being in shape physically. So I'll get into that later when we get a little further down the road as far as some of the issues that were responsible for why us not winning, in my judgment. So anyway, I was a running back at Fullerton, weighed about 190 pounds. And I got my whole purpose of going to college. My parents couldn't afford to send me to college. So I got a friend that actually, Zach gets a kick out of this, but it was a bus driver. But anyway, he was a contributor to the athletic program. And so he told the coaches about me, and I don't think I ever talked to a coach. All I got was a letter for a 4-year scholarship. And so here I was, the bus driver took care of it.
Wow. That's awesome.
He drove a bus. So that was a way for him to stay in contact with the kids. But anyway, I ended up at Nebraska in 1959. And of course, at that time, their freshmen couldn't play. So they were kind of a junior group of guys. And, so we ended up, we had four games, I believe. We played like maybe Doan or any of the state colleges so that the freshmen could get some experience with the game type conditions. So, I was involved in that. I didn't play much because I came in as a running back, and obviously that was not my position, because I found out I didn't play more than 4 or 5 minutes in 4 games. So I was persona non grata when it came to getting into the game. So I wasn't real hopeful that I was going to be able to make the progression to the varsity. But anyway, made it through that, and then moved on to the Jennings era. And the one thing I should say, even though our record was horrible, he probably was one of the best recruiters there was, because when Coach Devaney came in, he said, "I could not believe the talent that is here at Nebraska." So the and I don't know how when you want to transition into like 1960, which would be my first year, I did. They moved me to the line, and of course, back then, and this is kind of an interesting issue in that we didn't have any weights. We did not have a weight program. We had the old field house had a dirt floor with some hand weights and one barbell, because the theory was literally there was no weight program. So
Well,
the
I don't want
theory
to interrupt you, sir. That's more than what Jeff does still. So, just
So their theory was that if you lifted weights, it slowed you down. So whatever you brought to the table was pretty much it. So we didn't have the 300 pounders they have today and the bigger guys, because the game was more running than passing. And the weight program is what actually put weight on people and muscle, and that's how we got to where we are today with the large players. So when I was playing on offense, I played left guard. Bob Brown was right guard. We weren't playing against players that were really any more any bigger than we were. So we could get away with running as a guard. I was around 210, 15, 20 pounds, but I had the speed of a running back. So we ran, when Devaney came, we ran an unbalanced line, which confused the hell out of everybody, because they didn't understand quite how to play the against that. But I'm getting ahead of myself here a little bit. But anyway, one of the problems that the Jennings era had was that, it's kind of like if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same results. And the problem was we were having 3 and 4 hour practices. So when the game came around, we were exhausted. We had Thursdays where we would run full bore, full scrimmage, and sometimes we would have plays where it was goal line plays, and they'd put 20 guys on defense, and we were supposed to score. I mean, it was kind of crazy, actually. But the whole idea here, when Devaney came in, was that instead of 3 or 4 hour practices, so that when the game came around, we were fresh. Because I remember the day that Bob, Coach Bob, put the practice schedule up. It was a year and a half, or it was an hour and a half instead of 3 to 4 hour. We didn't know how long we were going to practice under Jennings. We just practiced until there was lights on the Coliseum. We would practice, and the receivers would run out of the lights because we were still practicing. So we were, by the time the game came around in Jennings era, we were exhausted. So the real key to Devaney was he brought in a staff. They were together. They didn't have to learn to get to know each other. They knew exactly what to do. And so it was very efficient. And an hour and a half practice was like a day off. So that's what we did every day. We'd have 10, 15 minutes at a position. They'd blow the whistle. We'd move to the next position. So we had a staff that Devaney brought in that knew each other. They knew exactly how to teach players to play the game. And that was really the biggest difference that we had was that we were ready to play football on game day. We weren't exhausted. So that was a real key. Plus, we had coaches that really knew what they were doing. Some of Jennings' coaches were, you know, in my estimation, they were more, I don't know if you guys have been involved in sports, but there's a lot of coaches that are more about yelling than they are about teaching. You know, they figure if they yell at you, I don't know what they figure they're going to accomplish, but yelling doesn't accomplish anything. So it has to be a teaching experience. So, you know, we just became, it was so easy because we had the talent of putting us together and being able to be fresh on game day. So
interesting.
That was the biggest transition. He had the talent and he had the practice ideas.
I'd love to ask you, sir, you mentioned, you know, there wasn't really a lot of weight training in those days. Did you
there
find
was no weight training?
No, yeah, sorry, no weight training. But did you find your experience of growing up on the farm in Fullerton sort of gave you an advantage for all like you mentioned, it kind of kept you in shape all the time?
Well, yeah, I mean, I had one summer where one of the guys that I played football with, we unloaded train cars at Gooch's. So, you know, unloading train cars in the heat, it's kind of like lifting weights. So it was a matter of staying in shape. And I currently weigh about the same weight that I did when I played. I might be 5 pounds over, but I played at about 225. Got a little shorter as we age, but it was speed was really my forte in terms of being able to, because when we ran the unbalanced line, we ran, and I don't know if you understand the unbalanced line, but we had the tackle moved to the other side. So we had two tackles on one side. So we had an end, a guard, a center, and a guard, and two tackles and an end. So we ran the ball into the short side of the field because they always moved over when they defended us. So the natural was to pull the wing back and the right guard and come around, and nobody stopped it all year long. It was just one of those crazy things. Now I can't tell you that I remember how long we ran the unbalanced line. If we did it in the Gotham Bowl, I can't tell you. I don't remember, but whatever it was we did, it was working at that time. So our first game was against South Dakota. That was a 53-0. And that started to get people's interest. And I got the first game ball that Bob Devaney ever handed out. I got
cool.
that game.
Sweet.
So, and I got one against the Oklahoma game. So,
wow.
And that was pretty much decided by, if you know anything about Bob Devaney, nothing happened unless he said it was going to happen. He was that kind of guy. But he was the kind of coach that you wanted to play for. And I don't know if you've had any sports where you really respect the coach and you just will do anything for it. And that's kind of the way we progress through the season. And, you know, when you're losing, you expect to lose. When you win, you expect to win. And when you're winning, you find a way to win. And that's what I don't understand about today's game is we just shoot ourselves in the foot every time we get into the fourth quarter.
Yes, we do, sir. Yes, we do.
It's a crazy thing, but
we think there's some weird voodoo or something like that going on with the football program, Dwayne. I don't know.
We're about to turn a corner, guys.
Yeah,
we're about
that's
to
right.
Turn
yeah.
a corner.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. The problem is it's gotten out of hand with too much money and, you know, and too much turnover. And, you know, whoever thought that a 17-year-old kid could be a millionaire, you know,
yeah,
it's
that,
kind of crazy.
Yeah,
it is crazy.
So, but anyway, the key to the whole season, I think, in 62, and if the first sellout we had was the Missouri game, I think that was our third game, and we had like 36,000 because at that point, the stadium didn't have an end. It was just the two sides. So it was around 36,000 thereabouts. But that was the first sellout. So that was number one on the sellout list. So that was, as we look back, that long time ago. So
Yeah, pretty historical.
anyway,
That's awesome.
yeah,
Yeah, for sure.
the real key, Bob came from Michigan, Alpena, Michigan. He was a disciple of Duffy Doherty. So he wanted, when we went to Michigan, he wanted to win that game. That's all there was to it. So that was kind of the key to that whole season, was us going to the big house and beating Michigan on their field. So, and that's just how the season progressed. We lost the Missouri game and we lost the Oklahoma game. But other than that, we had a successful 92 season, and I was one of the key moments in my life was with Devaney coming. He and Bill Thornton and I were co-captains. And for me to come from a small town, not really knowing what the heck was going on, and to be picked, and nothing happened that Bob Devaney didn't. He said the team selected us, but I know that isn't the way it works. When Bob Devaney wanted something to happen, it happens. So, and then I ended up winning the Tom Novak Award my senior year, which was the outstanding senior player. So I couldn't have asked for anything more. And then and I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit here, but the coaches wanted me to try pro ball, so I wasn't really tuned into that. But after the Gotham Bowl, and once we get to the Gotham Bowl, but anyway, I wanted to say that the Vikings wanted me to sign a free agency agreement. And after the game, when everybody else was out having a good time, I was being hotboxed by the Minnesota Vikings because they wanted me to go play as a free agent, sign a free agency contract with the Minnesota Vikings. So anyway, I decided that that wasn't for me as I got further down the line, because I had a lot of concussions in high school, and they didn't know what concussions were then. I played games, I can't remember playing them. But when I
Oh,
went to
yeah.
the university, they had a special helmet that was padded on the outside and the inside, and I never had a concussion the whole time I played at Nebraska. So the key was, I couldn't wear a suspension helmet. So anyway, I don't know where you want to go from here. I probably have digressed here and there all
No,
over the place.
you've been great.
This
Oh,
is
that's awesome.
fantastic. Well, it's pretty that 1960, you were a part of a lot of history there in 1962. I think a lot of people know that the story of going into Michigan and winning at the big house, and that was kind of an eye-opener for people like Devaney announcing his presence almost, and then the beginning of the sellout streak. And then I was reading up, by the way, all Common fans should get Devaney, Birth of a Dynasty. Let's see. I don't know if it's showing up there on the screen or not, but
Kind of
anyway,
blurry.
A little blurred.
Devaney, Birth of a Dynasty by Henry Cordes. It's fantastic. And actually, some of the things you mentioned, I read about when I was reading up again this morning, about, for instance, Devaney showing up and talking about how talented the team was and that sort of thing. But, and so you had, what was I saying? Start of the sellout streak, the Michigan win. And then of oh that and then of course the Gotham Bowl was just in historically Nebraska's third ever bowl game.
It was the
And I think
first bowl game they ever won. First victory,
yeah.
And so a lot of history there, and I think you could argue that you guys and your crew laid the foundation for the success that Devaney would go on to have. But
Absolutely.
would love to talk about that Gotham Bowl. So, speaking of this book, so the team ended 9-2, third place in the Big Eight, kicked off the sellout streak, third ever bowl game. And then I'm reading directly from the book. The Gotham Bowl in New York City against the University of Miami wasn't exactly a top tier affair. The Huskers were invited at the last minute, just 11 days before the game, and a New York newspaper strike assured that the game would get little publicity in the city. The Bulls' financial troubles prompted university officials to keep the Huskers playing on the tarmac in Lincoln the day before the game until the check for the team's expenses cleared the bank. Game day, Saturday, December 15th, dawned cold and snowy, the field frozen solid. It was believed that fewer than 1,000 fans came out to historic Yankee Stadium to brave the conditions. In the locker room before the game, Devaney apologized to his players for getting them into, quote, this crummy deal. It didn't. But then he told them the situation reminded him of his days as a back alley fighter growing up in Saginaw. Quote, there's nobody there to watch, he told them, but the toughest son of a bitch is going to win. Did he really say
awesome.
That?
I'm sure he did, because I'll tell you, when it got to halftime and we weren't playing the way Bob wanted us to, he got his Irish up. But I mean to tell you, it was, you wanted out of that room and you wanted to hit somebody, because he had a way of explaining things to you that made you want to get out there and do your job. So as far as the we had to wait on the tarmac because the ticket manager, because it was such a poorly funded bowl, that we waited on the tarmac until they wired $50,000 to pay for us to fly a DC-6 to New York. Wow. So it wasn't any money involved in it. I don't know how they even survived the year that they did it, but anyway, it was one of those experiences where when we got there, the field was frozen, and of course we weren't ready for that, because we were used to wearing the old cleats, you know, where they screw them in. So you know, trying to run around on a frozen field, you literally the guy going out for the pass had the advantage. It was tough to tackle anybody because you could never get a square shot at them, because everybody was slipping and sliding around. So it was definitely a different experience. And one of the things that I recall, and I hope this is the way I remember it, but because the running backs couldn't get traction, and I believe this to be the case, that the coach's shoes were kind of a wedgie type thing. Well, the backs ended up wearing the coach's shoes because they could get traction. Now, I don't know how the sizes all worked out and all that stuff, but I thought that was kind of an interesting situation where the coach's shoes were worn by the players to get traction. So,
wow. That's crazy.
One of those crazy things that went on. But anyway, one of the plays we ran was we always ran a side return on the kickoff, and we never practiced this, but Bob says we're going to run a middle return, and we ran a middle return, and Willie Ross ran it all the way for a touchdown. I think it was 92 yards or something like that. So
wow.
So just, you know, crazy things like that. And of course, George Myra, I don't know whether you looked at the statistics, but it was over 500 yards they put up. But when you look at the scoring, we all scored the same amount of touchdowns. It was the 2-point tries. We ran for ours, and they failed on their one kick. So they had to go for two, and it didn't work out. So it was a very close game. And actually, it was probably one of the most fun games to watch of any of the bowl games, just because coming from Miami, and George Myra was known by everybody. He was a fantastic player, great passer. So he threw for a lot of yards. We were a little more balanced, but, you know, I think the game was pretty much dictated by the field being so slick. So, sure. But it was a fun game to play.
And yeah, the Huskers win 36-34. Well,
no, it was 34-32, wasn't it?
Oh, I may have gotten that wrong. I thought it was 36-34, but you probably know better than I would. Here, we'll look it up here in a minute. But I'm curious, what was it like for you coming from Fullerton, coming from Lincoln, was that your first time in New York City? And did you guys get to spend some time in New York City as well?
Well, I didn't, because as soon as the game was over, all the guys went out to have fun, and I was being hotboxed by the Minnesota Vikings because they wanted me to sign a free agent contract. And in 1962, I was only 20 years old.
Wow.
I graduated. Well, I was 20 years old when I graduated. So it was a crazy deal.
You'll have to excuse my dumb question. What do you mean when you say hotboxed?
Well,
they were kind of putting the pressure on you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically it. They get two or three guys and just, telling you how great they are and what they're going to do for you and this, that, and the other thing. And of course, they never did get me a helmet. I went to camp, but they never got me a helmet, which I can understand. Why would you buy a special helmet for a guy that hasn't made the team?
Sure.
So anyway, I was up there for a couple of weeks and I decided to screw this. So I got in the car and go home. Well, that was back when they used to play the All-Star game in Soldier Field. It was kind of the NCAA guys against the pro teams or whatever it was. But anyway, the Joe Thomas was the general manager, and he came to Lincoln and he said, "You made the team. We want you to come," even though I walked out. And I said, "No, I'm done," you know. So anyway, when I got back, Coach Devaney said, I'm going to give you another year on your scholarship, and I want you to work with the freshmen and help teach them what you have done and as a linebacker and, how to play the game. Because, again, freshmen couldn't play varsity at that point. So I got another year under Coach Devaney, but I wasn't really exposed that much to what was going on with the varsity. I know T.O. was helping out with the freshmen at that point in time. So it wasn't until later that I think it was the next year, Tom moved up to the varsity. So anyway, it was a great experience. I feel really lucky to have been able to live through that whole thing and still upright and taking nourishment. So,
Dwayne, I'm curious. You and so many guys like you have your place in like this awesome history and tradition of Nebraska football. What has that been like for you over the years? Like, you have to have some like tremendous sense of pride with like, your contributions and what it is now. I mean, you mentioned that there's a sellout and it's 36,000 and now there's 85,000 people there. And you had a hand in kind of building that, you and Coach Devaney and T.O. and so many guys, but you're a part of that, years and years later. Do you still have like, is there still an attachment for you? Are you watching every Husker game every Saturday, or what's it like for you?
Well, to be perfectly frank, I have trouble watching the Husker games because I get so upset because
Welcome to the club.
I played to win. I never took a playoff. I mean, that's the way I played the game, either all in or don't play it. And I don't understand these players now that think they are privileged. And if they get a little upset, then they, I don't know how to explain it. It's just I feel like I am a part of the history and the beginning of it. I just would like us to finish. But I'm somewhat concerned that we're going to be caught in the mediocrity part of the game, because there's it won't be long till they'll take the football team and it won't be part of the university anymore. It'll just be a semi-pro league where they're paying the players.
Right.
At least that's what I see. I mean, I think the coaches' rules doing a great job of bringing kids in, but how do you keep them here? I mean, how do you build a culture And that culture is really important.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the successful teams. Look what happened to Alabama when the coach left. I mean, they really, you know, your history is so important. And it seems like Nebraskans, you know, it's been 20 years since we've done anything, but yet it seems like yesterday.
Right.
You know, we still want to get back there, and we're still trying to figure out how to do it. And I don't know what the answer is. The game has changed so much that I'm not sure I understand where we're headed.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I'm
here
a
at
huge,
the
huge fan, but
here at the Common Fan Podcast, we believe we're about to turn a corner back to national prominence.
I hope we are. If we can hold on to Riola, I think we can bring in receivers. We're getting some really good kids. But the game is played on defense. You have got to control the game on defense. And, you know, we've done that, but we're not consistent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we play a half and we're just controlling everything. And then the next half we're out there and we can't stop anybody. So I don't know whether it's personnel or they make adjustments or what it is, but it's frustrating to watch a game where it just seems to get out of control when you seem like you have control. So.
I'm curious. You seem pretty fond of Coach Devaney, and obviously he's on the Mount Rushmore for Nebraska football. And even those of us, I mean, when we were growing up, we remember Devaney as the athletic director. You know, his coaching days were a little before our time, but just curious. You know, it's not, and it sounded like you said you wanted to play for him. He was motivated, but you know, was he? The stories of him and what you see, the video clips of him, he's very charismatic, very likable. Did that translate through to the team, or like kind of what was it about his personality that made him so appealing and magnetic and that you wanted to play so hard for him?
I don't know if I can answer that question because I wasn't around him enough. I was only around him 1 year, played for him. I played both sides of the ball and he wanted to be on special teams. So I hardly went off the field. He wanted me on the team, on the field. So it was, I never got to be around him, except I know that he was just a special guy that you wanted to play for, you wanted to win for him. So I don't know. Like I said, there are some coaches, if you've been an athlete, that you just absolutely will go run through a wall for because they just they're really good at what they do, and they develop players. And that's one thing that we did when Osborne was there. When you're winning by, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 touchdowns, you get to play a lot of players. So those players end up being the future. But when you don't win games, you can't build the future. So that's where we need to get to, where we can get these kids that know they're going to step up in a year or two. But I don't know if the money's going to change all of that. But Devaney was a special, special guy. There wasn't anything that happened that Bob didn't control. No, if he played in a golf game, there wasn't a putt that wasn't, if it was 20 feet, it was a gimme. I'm not kidding you. He always won a golf tournament. So.
That's hilarious.
No one was going to question him on that, huh?
Well, it was just part of the game. Everybody expected Bob to come in and say, yeah, we won. So. But again, I didn't get to spend a lot of time with him other than that. Well, even the year I came back and coached the freshmen, they were off doing their thing. And I think as things matured, because I think we were getting the best player from every state around us, the best number one player. So we controlled everything because nobody could touch us. Teams didn't want to play us because they knew they were going to, when they walk out of there, were going to have about 5 or 6 guys that were hurt. Because, I mean, when we started our weight program, that's when we really excelled because nobody else had it. So that was really the key that really helped Bob and Tom to continue to be at the top of the game. So
do you have any memories of the young T.O. and kind of what he was like just at the you kind of knew him right at the beginning of his coaching career there?
Yeah. We used to play handball together in the old field house after the after we coached the freshmen, because he was working with the freshmen at that time. And he just one of these guys that, you know, I remember when we played Miami, and they had that great quarterback, and Tom said, you know, he was completing all these passes, and he said, just keep knocking him down. Even if he completes the pass, knock him down. By the fourth quarter, he's going to be looking for you, and then we're going to win the ball game. It was almost like he was a prophet.
I love that.
Warren Sapp, remember him from Miami. He was, when he was not tired, he can beat him. But we just kept running at him. And by the fourth quarter, he was out of gas. And that's when what Tom told the team, he said, we're going to keep running right at him. And when the fourth quarter comes around, we're going to win the ball game. It was almost like he told you what was going to happen. The players believed it.
That's amazing. Awesome. I love that story so much. That was in the Gotham Bowl in 62. He said, just keep knocking him down.
No, that would have been when we were playing Miami.
Oh, when we beat him in the
Orange Bowl and a lot of stuff like that. That's when Tom was transitioning from Bob to, offensive coordinator and eventually to the head coach.
Got it. Yep. Okay. Got it.
That was the glory days.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this has been thoroughly enjoyable. I don't know, Matt, Jeff, do you guys have any other questions?
No, I don't.
I do not.
Thank you for joining us, Dwayne. This has been awesome. It's been hearing about the Gotham Bowl and playing in those days from your perspective. It's really been great. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for giving us a little bit of your time. Appreciate it.
Well, I hope you can edit out whatever you want here. So I'm right.
No, we're keeping it all. Any other final thoughts or stories you want to share, Dwayne?
No, I'm glad you guys are doing this because I think this is something that people need to be reminded of, that where we've been, and we still are headed in the right direction. It's just that it's going to take a little more time.
Yep.
That's right. Well, we've talked to Johnny Rogers on our show. We've talked to Boyd Epley, and this conversation is right up there with those two. Just absolute honor for us to talk to a Husker legend and somebody who was a part of the very beginning of the Devaney era, which started it all as far as Husker fans are concerned. So really it's an honor and a privilege for us to be on.
Thank you very much for that. And God bless you all.
Same to you, sir. Common fans, we will be back at you after the Gotham Bowl, after the Pinstripe Bowl. We will have all of our.
We can still call it the Gotham Bowl. It sounds
better
anyway.
After the Gotham Bowl. That's right.
Absolutely.
So make sure to get strapped in, get ready to go, get your lucky Husker t-shirt on, get your lucky overalls, whatever it takes. And let's help pull the boys across the finish line. Special, special thanks to Dwayne Carlson for joining us today. 1962 co-captain, 1962 Tom Novak Award winner, Husker legend, and help coach Devaney start it all. So true honor and a privilege to have you, Dwayne. Thanks again for joining us. We will be back at you very soon, Common fans. In the meantime, as always, GBR for...
breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.